I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a most illuminating conversation with the producers and videographers of the most poignant documentary, Lahaina Rising. The show just won Hawaii International Film Festival's Made in Hawaii 2025 award, and rightfully so, as this documentary delves deep into real-time events that occurred when the August 2023 deadly firestorm destroyed the historic town of Lahaina, Hawaii. We'll meet up with Lahaina residents, director, cinematographer Maddie Schweitzer, Blake Remilb, producer and cinematographer, and impact producers Amber Bobbin and Keeley Badger. Schweitzer noted, "We wanted to tell the Lahaina story through the voices of those who lived it. It's a story not only of loss, but of heroism, advocacy, and hope, of a community fighting for a regenerative future grounded in land justice and aloha aina." Come along and join the conversation.
In the very beginning was strictly just to fly drone to see what's left, to help our neighbors look for vehicles or houses to see if anything was still there standing. A lot of the footage, you know, we're a little embarrassed about because of how shaky some of the stuff was, because we weren't filming. We were literally spending hours unloading boxes and getting people stuff, and there would just be a moment where we would be able to pick up the camera for 60 seconds, get a quick shot of what was happening, and then throw the camera back down and keep working.
Well, you guys were maybe too close to realize that shaky in the moment filming actually worked in your favor, in that kind of eye being there in the moment.
I've kind of noticed that some of that, you know, it does help it feel a little bit more raw and real. But you know, as cinematographers showing it to people, it's, you know, we're so critical of our own work. But, you know, there was, after I think two weeks or so, when the needs started to go down a little bit and the support, outside support, started to flow in, you know, Blake and I really, we just had a moment where there was so much going on, and I'll never forget, we looked at each other and we're like, man, this is so special. Like, what's happening right now, the way the community is coming together, what, you know, this is so sad. It's also so inspiring to see so many people working day in, day out. And it was like, man, we need to show this to the world. And there was a specific moment that Blake and I had this conversation, and we both agreed, and all of a sudden organically just started filming a little bit more and filming a little bit more. And after telling each other and telling just a couple people what our plans were, it just started to snowball. And I'm sure that when we first started, we thought we were just going to put out a short 10-minute YouTube documentary. And every day, the story got bigger and bigger and more people involved. And our goals just started to get higher and higher. And we realized that we really have something special that the world needs to see. So I think that's kind of how we just organically came together. And then we got a hold of DeAndre, who's just been an absolute instrumental part of this. We met him at one of the community meetings after a month or two. And us three together really just did everything we could to really make this something real. And as well as meeting Amber from week one, you know, she's been, anytime we have an idea and we say it out loud, she's helped us get it done. And maybe we've said a little, we're going to do a little bit too much. And somehow we have gotten it all done so far.
Well, that being said, you have just an amazing compilation of information, of video and whatnot. And that leads me to, how do you choreograph, you know, how do you storyboard to create it before you put it together?
Well, it's Blake right now, but so, like kind of what Maddie said, we just came together and started documenting everything, right? And the story itself, we're just documenting as we're living through all of this, since we're from this place and we're in the community. It's our family, friends, people that we know and love. We're living through the story that you watch pretty much every single day. And we all have our own stories itself, but the story just unfolded with what was actually happening and going on. So as we got into the editing room, that was a big challenging part for us, of course, because it's like we have all this footage, we have all this time that went on with different situations that were, you know, hard for the community. There's the mental health stuff, there's everyone moving from hotel to hotel, there's people trying to fight for land grabs and like all that kind of stuff. And then there was no like real storyboarding or real plan with it. The story just unfolded as our lives went on with it, and that's the story that we told. It's just how everything actually ended up happening throughout the past 2 years or so.
But again, how did you guys visually lay it out for yourselves to see where you wanted to go and how you wanted to put it together?
Yeah, so, you know, we started to really identify, with so many interviews, we started to identify whose stories were very common and who was echoing the same things. And, you know, to begin with, every time we asked somebody about how we got to this point in Lahaina, you know, most people mention the past 100 years and the degrading of our land and how this isn't just something that happened on August 8th. It's our land and water has been neglected. So that was something that we repetitively kept hearing right away from the very beginning. And we instantly kind of knew, hey, I think we're going to start this off a lot more than just the fire. We really need to make sure to explain to people how we got here. So, you know, after a while we did have a whiteboard and we were drawing it out and trying our best to do storyboarding. But as Blake said, you know, every interview made us scratch our head to go a different angle. So, you know, we weren't able to tell everyone's story, but just doing our best to echo what the majority of these interviewees and community members were saying, experiencing, or even believing. And, you know, trying to stay on this nice, slow story arc that goes up and down throughout the entire film has been very difficult. I feel like we've done a really good job making sure to include majority of the important things that are going on here.
It's interesting because there are two dimensions. You have the human element, the two guys that they're looking for their dad and they find him dead. I mean, just powerful up close experiences. But then on the macro side, you have what you delineated about corporate cane growers and whatnot diverting water. That was really poignant. Talk a moment about that.
Yeah, so Blake and I and DeAndre, you know, we grew up in Lahaina here when it really was a plantation era. Everything was green. Our backyards were all sugar cane plantations. Our backyards were all pineapple. So, you know, that was our life growing up as a child. And then the day that it all stopped, we were really able to see how quickly the land just dried up in just a few years once they stopped irrigating it. And I think that's really what led to so many people questioning, you know, hey, what happened to all this water? We had so much water back in the day for taro patches and ulu trees and Hawaiian agriculture. And then our first 10 years, 20 years of life, we saw that we had more than enough water to provide half the world with sugarcane, it seemed like, and half the world with pineapple, it seemed like. And once all these corporations left, they did not return the water. They stopped watering the lands and they never returned it. So this is something that we have experienced firsthand growing up. It's a lot of people don't understand what happened, and we did have to do some digging, but it's just the water is such an important factor here into why these conditions became such a perfect storm on August 8th with high winds and a fire.
Well, that being said, in the here and now, is there momentum to have the water undiverted, to have it flow the way it did in natural flow?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we have all these rivers that should be flowing that aren't flowing. And one of the biggest things, like after the fire, that was a real big eye opener for me, was when we went and visited the place called Moku'ula down by Front Street, down by 505. Over there, the pumps stopped pumping out the water from 505, which was like a mall before the fires, and that area was just coming back to life. We didn't have rain or anything. We have that part, that section in our film, and you can see the vegetation coming back. Like even stories like from my dad or my grandparents, or just like when we talk to Kupuna elderly people, they tell us how they used to swim in the rivers, or like Lahaina used to look so different and all this kind of stuff. I've heard facts, I don't know how true it is, but there used to be like 40 plus rivers that used to flow here in West Maui, and now we only have like two. So Lahaina was called the Venice of the Pacific at one point, and that was for a reason and a purpose. And I think a lot of us, as we try to rebuild our town and all of that, we want to try to get some of that back. And I think now that there's so many eyeballs and attention on how the water was diverted and how people ran out of water trying to fight the fire, it's like, this is our chance to really do that and get back Lahaina a little bit better than it was even before the fires itself.
On another dimension that was just sobering for me, I'm a member of California State Guard. So when you guys delineated how, in my opinion anyway, the Hawaii State Guard, Coast Guard and whatnot failed to be immediate responders. What happened there? What was the breakdown?
That's a great question, and it was really hard for us, at least with telling this story, because we have so much respect for the first responders. You know, a lot of the firemen and police officers are our good friends. A lot of these officers and first responders lost their own home. So there was so much going on, you know, and we tried our best to shine light on these organizations and, of course, some of the shortfalls, but we really want to make sure that it's in the higher ups, right? You know, it's decisions that were made from on the high up National Guard. There were National Guard people that were crying and they felt so bad, and they were people. They were showing their humanity everywhere. No matter what uniform you saw, I truly believe that these were all people that really, really cared, you know. But at the same time, they had to follow their orders, you know, to, you know, in the days after, you know. So it was very difficult.
That being said, there was a failure from the top down. Why did it take so long for the Coast Guard to come and save you guys that are in the water?
Yeah, I mean, that's still questions that, you know, we may not have answers for. We're hoping this film could help people come up with questions and look for answers themselves. You know, but realistically, once our telephone, we had no power before the fire started. There was no cell phone, towers were down. So the communication between Maui, and especially West Maui, leading up to the fire that day, there was already no communication, right? I wasn't able to get a hold of my wife and kids before the fire started. So it was, I think, it shows also our infrastructure and lack thereof when it comes to just escape routes for traffic, when it comes to cell phone towers and power lines, that, you know, once our communication is cut off, I do believe and understand that maybe the Coast Guard and the police, they did not know how severe it was until they were on this side of the island, seeing it for themselves. And, you know, when it comes to the National Guard, when it comes to the Marines, when it comes to the Army, I have no idea why half of Pearl Harbor was not at our front doorstep the very next day, because the next day, the whole world knew about what happened. So those are some of the big questions that we still don't have answers for, and it is still confusing on how we have the biggest military base in the world almost here in just 40 miles away, and they never really showed up in force.
When that being said, it's one of those lessons learned in going forward. What is the process of community brainstorming, you know, how to change that dynamic so there is a quick first responder from the state, from Honolulu?
It's a hard one, right? Because I feel like even though the days after the fire, we're just like, where's the help and all of that? But we saw the community come together and almost prove like we are like independent in our own selves, and like we just need the infrastructure to be set up better, whether that's getting the rivers flowing again or just being more self-sustaining. But it's, you know, there are the plans for the future of Lahaina. I think the community all has their input and what we want it to look like, in terms of evacuation routes, sounding the sirens if something similar happens like that, or metal poles, or putting the power lines underground. Like, there's so many things that, you know, even back in 2018, all these things were said to Hawaiian Electric, but none of the things were implemented or actually taken seriously. And it took a fire to burn out of town to really like highlight all these issues and to plan forward. So, I think, you know, on August 8th itself, the weather was super crazy that day. I know some of the Coast Guard people just couldn't even get in, or like the people down by the seawall. There, a lot of the they didn't know they were down there till later on too. Like, it was just like a perfect storm of chaos. And you can see that even in our police footage and all that kind of stuff. Like, I do believe like everyone that they were trying to do their best, but it was just so much craziness going on with telephone poles all over the roads and things like that.
And how about the failure of turning on the tsunami warning sirens? I mean, that is crazy. And how is that going to change?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, this event and what happened is the change that we needed. It's horrible that we had to go through this, but I am very confident that that mistake is not going to happen again. I think the people that were in charge were not the right people. I think that's very clear as he resigned just a few days later. I also think that, unfortunately, in their mind, just as you stated, you know, we don't call them emergency sirens. We call them tsunami sirens. You know, the tsunami warnings are going off on the 1st. And unfortunately, I think we're just so used to always watching out for tsunamis, being in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, that we're not prepared or expecting that we'd ever need some sort of county-wide sirens for a fire. And they are supposed to be for any emergency, those sirens. They're not just supposed to be for tsunamis. So the excuses that were made on why those sirens were not sound that day, I don't think will ever happen again.
Well, back to the process of putting the film together and creating that storyboard. Looking in from the outside, I'm just surmising that since you had such community engagement with you guys, with what you were doing, is that how you sourced a lot of the social media videos that you used in the film? Were the local people that said, hey, I have a video of this or that? How did that come about?
So since we're from the community and, you know, we're all doing the community efforts after, like, we know pretty much Lahaina is the place where you basically know everyone in your town. You go to the grocery store, you're there 10 minutes talking, running into people that you know. And then, you know, like, my family had a hub up Lahaina Luna. We're down at Kona Boat Ramp. We're just, this fire brought our community very, very close together because it's something that we all experience. And with that, as our community saw us starting to bring our cameras out or know about us making a documentary film, like, we created like this trust within the people here that we're going to tell the story by Lahaina for Lahaina. So if we needed to reach out to people, or people like knew that we're making the film, they're like, hey, I'll give you this footage, this is my story. So that part of the process became pretty easy just because it was organic and some story coming out of Lahaina, because it became a responsibility for us to tell this story, because who else is going to tell this story if not us? If someone else is telling this from the outside, like, we don't have control over that. So at least Lahaina has a story coming out of Lahaina that we can kind of control the narrative of what actually happened. So that process was really just us reaching out to community members that we know might have footage, or them even reaching out to us and offering to help.
Well, it was a home run because it just made it palpable, you know, the kind of you are there moment in that filming. It's just really poignant.
Thank you.
I know one thing that I was most touched by was Lina rising, was the community coming together, and just incredible what you guys did. You saw a need and you jumped on it. I mean, it was incredible. It gives you hope for communities everywhere.
Wow. I can't tell you how much that means to us to hear you say that, because that's truly, that was the motivating factor for us to make this film. It truly was, you know. We saw there was so much tragedy, but at the same time, it was so inspiring to see a community in such need come together. And we really hope to inspire the rest of the world with this film.
So immediate. Like you were saying, you saw a need and you went and got material and supplies and loaded them on your boat. Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I feel like we always knew the people of Lahaina are, right? That aloha spirit, being there for your neighbor, checking in on people and all of that. But after the fires and how the community came together just, you know, proved that and showed that. It's something I believe growing up, we always knew we can count on. And just to see it to come to fruition the way that it did was beautiful. And like Maddie said, it is the main reason, like, we wanted to start documenting everything, because we're like, at moments, like, we'll be in it, you know, unloading a boat or getting purifiers and people are doing whatever we had to do. And it's like when we took the time to step back and like reflect a little bit, you know, be brought to tears. I'm like, this is our community. This is our home. This is beautiful. And there's no other place I would rather, you know, grow up and call my home. And there's nothing like it. And it's what Lahaina is.
One of the other dimensions that made the movie so encapsulating was your music. Talk to us for a moment about how you visualize and put together the music underbed.
Well, you know, that is, it's such an important factor when making any film, and we know that from our experience, you know, is you can have the best story in the world, but truly music helps bring the feelings and emotion to life. And it's something that realistically we're still working on. This is still a work in progress. This is going to be a work in progress till the day we sign a distribution deal. We are making sure that we are using the most powerful things in the smartest way. You know, in a past film of mine, we spent way too much money on specific music rights. So we were able to find a really talented composer, David Kate, to help really compose a custom soundtrack for this film, and his really, really highlighted the community section. That's really where we feel like, you know, his music and emotion just brings it just brings that feeling of togetherness and hope in the sense of tragedy, you know. And we found another amazing musician named Andy Sorge that's really helped us with the fire section, and being able to bring in the heavy, eerie, chest pain, emotional feeling music while you're going through this roller coaster of a ride. And it's very important for us to, we wanted it to be heavy. We don't want it to be too heavy. And it's also why in the middle of the fire section, you see the timeline go back and forth. We, in the middle of the fire, we jump back in time explaining why there's no water. And that really gives us an opportunity to have lighter feeling music, get a little bit of that weight off your chest for a minute, be able to breathe for a few minutes before we get back into the fire. Because the footage along with the music, especially in the fire, it's heart-wrenching. It makes your chest hurt. And if we were to stick through that the entire time, it'd be hard to sit through. So really, the music is probably one of the biggest hurdles and most important aspects of this that we are taking into account. You know, where we can do almost everything when it comes to filmmaking. We can edit, we can color grade, we can do all this. But when it comes to music, we had to find the right person to help us with this. And I really feel like we did that.
However, it came together just so powerful, so poignantly. It's just, I can't imagine not having that music under bed in transitions. Were the musicians Hawaiian? Were they from Maui? How did you find them?
So it was actually, we're trying hard again to find somebody because we did not have much of a budget, and anyone we spoke with a couple local people, and you know, it's really expensive for music. And it was actually not until one of my friends, Tamara, who lost her home in the fire, she has some really good connections, and her family has a foundation, the Ray and Vera Conniff Foundation. And they ended up being one of our largest supporters, you know, when just when it comes to donating a little bit of funds, while also having this connection with David Katete. So they're in the music industry, and she was able to find David. He is out of New York, but he was able to, I mean, saying he gave us a discount is an understatement, you know, to find somebody that's willing to put in months of work. He's a composer, but he's not doing things on the computer. He works with orchestras. He works with live musicians. So he spent months creating this. And as much as we're still right now making sure to add some Hawaiian music to make sure we have local musicians in here, the fact that we were able to find anybody that can put in this sort of time and effort to create a custom soundtrack for us.
We just alluded to your process of getting the film out there. How is your process of getting a major streaming distribution deal coming along? Are you optimistic about that?
We are starting to get more optimistic. Of course, regardless of anyone's political beliefs, this has been a very difficult last year when it comes to the arts world, when it comes to fundraising and getting grants secured, with a lot of the, you know, the federal cuts that went on. We kept hearing from people in the industry that this was just the worst time to be doing this, but we didn't let that stop us. And honestly, you know, we've had a lot of hits. We expected we would finish a film and have Netflix knocking on our door to ask us permission to let them play it on their site, and that's not the way it works. And it's been a longer road, I think, than we could have ever expected, but now we understand the process of what it takes to create an indie film and somehow get the attention of major distribution. So right now we do not have that. We're still calling everyone we possibly can that might know someone who knows someone, but the smartest and best road right now is the film festival circuit and just trying to win as many film festivals and get as many laurels as possible to really garner and gain the attention from a major distribution platform.
Just last week, you won the Made in Hawaii Award from the Hawaiian International Film Festival. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. That was a big deal for us, you know? It's like we're making this film, spending all this time putting blood, sweat, and tears while simultaneously trying to show for our community, and to win that award was an honor, so... And having a world premiere in Hawaii was just the way it was supposed to be, you know? And, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to distribution, it's like, that's one of the biggest questions we get asked, even from our own community. And we're going to be doing community screenings. I'm sure Amber can speak on that later. But it's with the distribution, our goal, like, for the world to be able to see this and get as many eyeballs on it, because we do believe we can make an impact, because what happened to Lahaina can happen anywhere in the world. And just to be even inspired and motivated by our community's response and just highlighting all the issues that we highlight in the film, and just to get the world to not only not just forget about us, but to see what fights are in their community that are what somewhat similar they could be having, just to make the world a better place.
A little bit more on film festivals. Have you guys lined up any other film festivals that are waiting to happen?
Yeah, we're still waiting right now. Up until a week ago, we didn't quite feel like we had a finished product up until days before Hawaii International Film Festival. And this month has been the first time that we're very confident that we have a finished story. This bow is getting tied on. It's not completely tied on yet. But you know, we're really excited for the next few months to get feedback from some more major film festivals.
Out of curiosity, what items in the movie do you want to tweak yet?
Right now it's the community section that we want to be able to include as many people in this film as possible, while at the same time letting the viewer feel emotionally connected to some of our main characters. So it's trying to find that balance of following a few main characters along the film, but also doing our best to include as many people and as many faces as possible to really get the feeling that this film is made by an entire community. And there's no way to ever get that perfectly. We're not going to be able to show 13,000 faces and get 13,000 stories. But this film really is made by community members. This is made for community members. So this is a film made by Lahaina for Lahaina, but we're trying to make damn well sure that when we show this, we're more concerned about showing this locally here on Maui than we are in New York or Hollywood, right? We want to make sure that the Maui and Lahaina community sees this and is proud of seeing themselves on the big screen. You know, a lot of this is sensitive content, but at the same time, the second half of our film really shows how strong our community and our home is. So that's really the thing that we are still trying to tighten in. We just added a nice local musician this week to be able to really bring the feeling of this community section together and make it feel more local and more Hawaiian. But it's something that it's ever evolving.
That's so cool. You alluded to this in the movie, and that's the California fires. And there's so many parallels. Have you observed how those communities have come together?
Yeah, I mean, I got to talk with some of the people from those fires or people helping out over there, and there's definitely some similarities. Obviously, the biggest difference is, I mean, there's differences, right? Like, we're on an island surrounded with, you know, the Pacific Ocean and all that, so it's pretty hard to get stuff over there, and they're, you know, they have more access. But in terms of how the community came together, there are a lot of parallels with different hubs getting set up over there and the community support. It's just like something, you know, before our disaster over here, it's you until you really like face it yourself and live it. It's all the things, like I said, like you would hope would happen, but until you actually live it and see it happen in terms of how your community comes together. I know the story that was over here, there are parallels that were over there as well. And at the end of the day, that's what we have to strive and be as humans, is to be there for our neighbors and for our people, you know?
And one more thought on that. It just seems like a no-brainer for this movie to show in LA and in Northern California.
Yeah. For sure. I think every place that faces wildfires, any kind of disaster, like I even know that Katrina doc came out, like, which is what, 10 years way later. And it's like so powerful, and you learn a lot there too. And even the lack of government and all that was an issue over there too. It just seems like a lot of these issues that have been highlighted, that we are highlighting as well, continue to happen. But that's why it's so important for us to try to make an impact, have our impact campaign that we're working on as well, just so things can change moving forward, so we're not caught up in a situation like this again.
Tom, this is Amber Bobbin, and we also have Keely Badger on the line. But I think what's really important is, you know, all four of these, you know, men have done such a wonderful job of, you know, getting the story told, gaining the public awareness, gaining the trust, getting things moving forward. And Phil Schlieder is also a part of the producing team here. And our purpose and goal moving forward for the Lahaina Rising team as impact producers is to develop a 2026 community education and impact campaign. This will be a statewide initiative featuring all island screening tour, workshops, ecological knowledge toolkit for educators and organizers, dialogues on disaster preparedness, community care, regenerative recovery. So this team is seeking a primary sponsor to lead this campaign, which, you know, to answer your questions, this will help us bring it not only to 33 screens screens in the state of Hawaii, but also with partnerships, you know, on the mainland, around the world, helping communities lead with what happened here to let's hope this doesn't happen to others. And if it did happen to you, how can we learn from each other? And so that is the idea behind this impact campaign, to really educate and organize and continue to use these lessons learned. As we know, disasters are going to continue to happen, but how do we streamline this in partnership? And that is our true hope. And so, you know, this is more than just a film. This is a movement. This is about remembrance. This is about resilience. This is about, you know, how do we make this world a better place through land, water, community, and culture? And the last thing I would like to say is, you know, being a witness to seeing how community came together. You know, it's been said before, but it is truly something that I've never, ever seen before. And I feel if the world can see a little bit of how this community came together, putting every difference aside in the moment of tragedy, but the moment of coming together and healing, the world would truly be a better place.
That's so cool. So it follows that you guys have created a Lahaina Rising nonprofit, correct?
No, we have not, actually.
That seems like a natural place to go, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. We've thought about it. Honestly, there's I think having a nonprofit right now is a double-edged sword. Nonprofits are so important, but there's so many popping up directly after the fire. And it takes a lot of work. And to and my family runs a separate nonprofit, and I know how much work it does take to do things right. And right now, we've put everything in our life on hold for this film. We don't barely have time for my children right now, and starting any other project is just hard to start that fight.
Keely, is there anything else that we should add about the impact campaign, where we are and what our future goals are here?
Yeah, certainly. Hi, Tom. This is Keely Badger. You know, I think one of the hallmarks of a good impact campaign is to turn a film into a movement, right? To move audiences to take some sort of meaningful action, whether it's in a personal way in their own lives or shaping public discourse, influencing policy, or mobilizing sort of grassroots organizations and networks. And I think one of the beautiful things about this film and the film team is that they were already intricately involved in the movements, right, already happening before the fire, through the fire, and now beyond. And I think the film really chronicles those movements for rebuilding Lahaina and rebuilding Maui in a regenerative way, in a way that really prioritizes community-centered decision-making and sovereignty over the policies and practices that define Lahaina's future, but have historically excluded the community's interests. And of course, as Amber mentioned, you know, we're talking about land rights, water rights, community housing and equity, and of course, sort of cultural, sustaining Hawaiian language and cultural resiliency. And so one of the beautiful things is that there are so many great organizations in Lahaina and on Maui that are already doing this good work. And part of our job has been to partner with them as early local impact partners, including organizations like Lahaina Strong and the Lahaina Community Land Trust, among others. So it's really these groups that are already established 501c3s that are doing the work. And the film really supports their work and shines a light on their continued advocacy.
Cool. A little random, but how is the process of eliminating short-term rentals evolving? Is it continuing? Is it a positive direction right now?
Yeah, so it really is. And that's another thing we want to make sure to clarify is we're not, the community isn't against short-term rentals in general. We've just identified the overwhelming amount of short-term rentals here. And it's really the fight right now has been against just a specific exemption list of certain short-term rentals that are in residential areas that have had an exemption for the past 30 years or so. It's called the Minatoya list with these exempted short-term rentals. So we don't want to make it seem like we're against all short-term rentals, but the fight here for reversing this exemption for the Minatoya list for these 7,000 units, it's the progress is moving forward tremendously. And it's, I think, again, it's another one of those big things that we want to show the world, that you can have young community leaders stand up, create an organization together, or even just a group of people that could come up with an idea and actually bring it to the county and bring it to the state and have a grassroots coalition of non-politicians be able to actually make change and bring a bill to life. And the fact that we even did that is a win in itself, let alone the fact that the governor has now jumped on board and agreed that this is one of the top priorities right now. So we do feel like this is moving in. As of 2026, there's going to be shortly phasing out some of these certain short-term rentals. But again, it's more than the fact that it actually is happening is how inspiring it is that a group of young, motivated people were actually able to bring forth a bill and get it this high up.
What's going on in that dimension?
Yeah, you know, that's still a really rough one, affordable or not. You know, we do realize that we live in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there's a reason why everything here is so expensive. So I think what's affordable for some people may not be for others, but there's a lot of conflict about it too on certain affordable housing projects that are going up. But we're really hoping that the combination of new housing developments, affordable housing developments that have now come up, as well as rebuilding some of the homes are generating really great momentum right now, as well as these certain short-term rentals phasing out, we're really hoping it's going to create an opening for more affordable housing here on Maui. I mean, it has to. Some people act like it's going to shut down the entire economy, but we truly hope that it's going to stall the growth rate of rent, as maybe even bring it down a little bit. That's the hopes. But, you know, we had a lot of negative things to say for the first year and a half. But in the last 6 months, we've seen a lot of positive change just when it comes to homes being rebuilt, new housing projects coming up. But the biggest thing is we want to make sure that it's being done right. We want to make sure that they're taking the water from the right places, using it in the right way, making sure that they're not just building a bunch of homes for people to live in, but also, again, taking care of the surrounding land around these housing projects. It's so much more than just building a big building and letting people move in there. We want to make sure that this is, as we say, it's done pono, it's done right with not just people, but also the environment in mind.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that, you know, at the end of the day, Lahaina is its people. And for so long, we've been, you know, in this place where we're prioritizing, you know, tourism or money and just everything else that it seems like other than the people itself. And with a local family moving away every single day too, that's a really hard pill to swallow, especially with so many generational families just having to move away or maybe not have enough funds to rebuild their home. And it's like a lot of the short-term rentals that even Maddie was speaking on were used to be apartments or places that, you know, my dad's even lived in or like different family members have lived in, and we're just getting pushed out. And we're trying to keep people here and to make things more balanced. And the trajectory we're headed before the fire was just not the right place to go. And now we're just trying to reverse all of that and bring back what should be.
Where does somebody go? How would somebody view the movie if they're listening? Where do you get more information?
Yeah, well, right now I think the best thing to do would just be follow our pages on social media. It's at Lahaina Rising on Instagram. We have lahainafilm.com. To really just keep talking about this. The more that we have people talking about this project and talking about this film and asking where they can see it, I think will increase the chance of us getting distribution because of a popular demand. You know, it's really important that people don't stop talking about this, right? I wish it was as easy as for us to just get this project on Netflix for everybody to see tomorrow. But right now, yeah, we need the community's help. We need everyone's help from around the world to talking about this, bringing it up. Did you hear about this film that might be coming out soon? And, you know, anybody, we also want to send a huge thank you to everybody that donated during the fires and during the relief efforts. You know, it meant so much to so many people. And right now, unfortunately, we're still at the stage where we're doing fundraising. We need some more, whether it's support from businesses, from sponsors, from anybody to really help us get to the places we need to get and get the attention of the major platforms. Guide the way. There's so much more than just impact producers. You know, for anyone listening out there that is an artist or a filmmaker and wants to do something like this, you know, it is, finishing a film is just half the battle. There's so much more behind the scenes that needs to get done, and I think it's a sobering experience for us, but at the same time, we have been through enough that we're not going to let anything knock us down. We got through everything we went through in 2023, and it's just an uphill battle from here, and we're not going to give up. Thank you very much. My name is Maddie Schweitzer, the director of Lahaina Rising, and you can find me at MAT50 on Instagram.
All right, mahalo for your time. This is Blake Rommel, the producer on Lahaina Rising, and you can find me on social media at BKRVlogs.
Amber?
This is Amber Bobbin, impact producer with 360 Media. I can be found on Instagram at AHBOBIN as in Nancy.
This is Keely Badger, also an impact producer on the project. You can find me on Instagram at 360 Media Campaigns. That's 360 Media Campaigns.
Awesome. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Really, really appreciate your time and effort and all your love. So thank you.
See you guys.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
until we meet again when Hawaii calls again. This program came from Hawaii.